Hello, and welcome to Volunteering Discovery. This is a podcast which takes you behind the scenes of volunteering in health and social care in Norfolk and Waveney. Volunteers enhance the experience of people accessing health and social care in a huge variety of ways, in our hospitals, our communities, and even from the comfort of their own homes. I'm your host, Sarah, a volunteer coordinator working in the NHS. Volunteering for Health is an exciting national programme that is being delivered through a partnership between NHS Charities Together, NHS England and CW+. Norfolk and Waveney are one of 15 partnerships successful in their application for funding. To find out more about this opportunity, producer Jules spoke to Nikki Stainton at Voluntary Norfolk and Samantha Hartles at NHS Charities Together. First, we'll hear Jules chat with Nikki about the Norfolk and Waveney partnership.
Thank you so much for being here today to talk to us about Volunteering for Health. Could you start by telling us who you are and what your role is within the Volunteering for Health partnership in Norfolk and Waveney?
Hello. Yeah, my name is Nikki Stainton. I am the joint head of sector support at Voluntary Norfolk, with a particular focus on volunteering. And Voluntary Norfolk is one of the partners of Volunteering for Health, and we are leading on quite a lot of the delivery of the activities and have based here two of the new posts that have been created through the project.
We are going to be hearing from Samantha later about what Volunteering for Health is in a national context. Could you tell us what the idea behind the partnership in Norfolk and Waveney was?
We had been meeting in a cross-sector forum for a little while to try and create a Norfolk vision for volunteering and to develop a sort of coordinated, joined-up approach to that. So that had started in 2022, that initially research and then developing the ideas and sounding them out and then having an official launch in 2023. And so since then, we've gradually been trying to build the relationships between the voluntary sector and the health sector and the local authorities to support volunteering across the whole of Norfolk initially. And then when we saw the Volunteering for Health initiative advertised, we thought this was a fantastic opportunity to try and translate some of our ambitions into actions by being able to secure a budget to pay for staff to be able to actually go out and test some of the ideas we've got specifically around trying to make volunteering more inclusive, more welcoming to people who haven't traditionally volunteered, and to make it people feel, recognise the benefits of it.
And in those 3 years of the project, what are you hoping will be achieved?
Good question. It has about three main strands to it, this project. One strand is looking at how we work with voluntary sector organisations, charities, community groups, social enterprises, any sort of not-for-profit groups, to engage members of the public who are experiencing health inequalities, and in particular those who have learning disabilities, autism, or are neurodivergent, or looked after children or children leaving care. We knew from research in Norfolk that those groups are some of the key ones that suffer from health inequalities. So we identified that they would probably get a lot of benefit from volunteering, from that sort of social contact, from the confidence it gives you, from also moving towards work. We identified those. So that is one group that we're going to be working with. And we have a volunteering innovation manager who's just been appointed, who will work with those organisations, those voluntary organisations, to develop small-scale projects where we can try out ideas of what are the main barriers, how do we get over them, what are the main motivations, how can we make volunteering attractive, how can we support people to move on from one-offs into more regular volunteering, and particularly if that can be within health and care settings. So we have a volunteering innovation fund, which is there to help cover the costs for these voluntary organisations for any activities they're setting up. So they're not for core costs, but they're for project costs, really. And part of that money award will be to enable them to help us learn about what's working, what's not. So there can be quite a lot of evaluation in there and reviewing of the main lessons. Strand two is about working in health settings, but primarily primary care settings, GP surgeries, community pharmacies, maybe community dentistry, practices, and helping the staff in those organisations to engage with volunteers if they haven't done before or to extend what they do. Because we know that volunteering in some of the health sector is very effective, but doesn't exist in others. So the third strand is this Get Involved Fund, and which is part of the Get Involved Norfolk website, which is about recruiting volunteers. And we also have now just developed into a skills hub so that people will be able to find opportunities for training and development. So this might be for volunteers or people thinking about volunteering, or also for volunteer managers. And then beyond that, sort of at a sort of longer term level, we're hoping to make the arguments to the authorities that have the funding to say volunteering is really beneficial, it's really effective, it can help solve a lot of problems, but it doesn't come for free.
Thinking about those different strands of the programme, I'm curious how they relate to what you found through the Vision for Volunteering and what was discovered through that research.
I think the main lessons we learned from that, and they're similar to the national research findings as well, is that a lot of the long-term, regular, older volunteers that have been underpinning many organisations for decades sometimes had to step back during COVID because they were older, they may have been vulnerable because their organisation stopped doing what it was doing or had to pivot to a more technology-based way of delivering services, which didn't really suit them. So we lost a large swathe of some of the key volunteers in organisations, particularly smaller organisations, rural ones, and that it was proving difficult to recruit new volunteers because people are there were so many demands on their time. Those that were coming up, there was the active elderly still, very often were extending their time at work. The retirement age has extended so that they were still working, or sometimes they were choosing to work, sometimes they were going back into work. Very often they were doing care duties for their family, different generations of their family, within the community, perhaps neighbours. And then people are working. We all know everybody's trying to do more with less time these days. So the sort of the regular volunteering opportunities were not being taken up. We need to think about the sorts of opportunities that people can access, that are perhaps more responsive, that perhaps can be done remotely if they still are not happy about leaving home, or they want to fit around work commitments. So things like telephone befriending or sort of online coaching, or even being a trustee, but from a distance where you can join online for meetings. So we're looking at those different sorts of opportunities. We're also looking at how volunteering can be made attractive to younger people, so that we're looking at developing the next generations of volunteers. And then just around issues around accessibility, the physical accessibility into workplaces, but also the sort of the additional support that sometimes is needed. And so it's about looking at quite specific barriers that different groups face. And we can't solve them all. Transport is quite a big issue in Norfolk, and that limits where people can go to volunteer. But there are ones that we can reduce or even hopefully eliminate.
In the partnership, you've mentioned that Voluntary Norfolk are leading a lot of the delivery element. Who are the other partners? And could you tell us about the role that they'll be playing?
There are seven partners altogether. So the ICB is the lead partner. The ICB is handling the actual grant that comes in and so on, doing that financial reporting. Part of the support to the voluntary organisations that we're going to work with is that Community Action Norfolk and Community Action Suffolk are going to help administer the grants, but also give support to those smaller organisations that might need it. So whilst we're in contact with them and we're saying, oh, you're doing some great bit of work here, but maybe you need some support with looking at your business planning or your trustee recruitment or support or marketing and social media. Is there other things that we can do to help you become a more robust organisation, plan for the future, to identify perhaps other funding streams to make them more robust? So that's going to be a great addition, I think, to those people that we're going to engage with, those organisations. Norfolk County Council is a partner because they have public health under their wing. So that's something that we need to be aware of. And we have close connections with the community team at the County Council, and they're very supportive of this sort of work and of us making sure that volunteering can grow and can develop. And we have Sally Dyson from the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, who has fantastic experience of volunteering within the health service, and she is a font of wisdom about and knowledge about how to support volunteers and what the benefits are and where we can direct them to. And then the final partner is the Institute for Volunteering Research, who are based at the University of East Anglia, and they are working alongside us to help us evaluate what it is that we're doing. So we're asking the organisations we're giving the small funds to, how are they working for you? We need to be looking at ourselves and saying, how is this working overall? Is it achieving what we're trying to achieve? How do we know that it is? And how can we demonstrate in the longer term that volunteering is worth supporting?
It sounds like there's still a lot of work to do. The programme started last year. What's been happening since then?
It's like an iceberg, really. There's not an awful lot at the top of that's poking out the water, but there has been a great deal of work to build a foundation for it. Because this is a national scheme and we are one of 15 collaborations that have been given funds, there has been quite a lot of development time going in to make sure that there was structures and paperwork and advice and opportunities that were going to be available for all of us. There's been a focus on trying to establish cross-area relationships so that we can learn from each other, share as we go along the learning. There's also been putting in place those, making more robust those partnership relationships, recognising how are we actually going to deliver this? What is the shape of the jobs that we need to have out there? How are we going to find the right people to do those jobs once we've decided that? So we have been having quite a lot of meetings, setting up a lot of the structures and the systems that will be essential for the next couple of years, and then going through the recruitment process.
So the Innovation Fund has launched. What else is coming next?
We'll be talking to the primary care networks and those within the NH system that are using volunteers already or have said that they would like to develop volunteering opportunities in their practice or in their settings. So that's going to be an important part of the next sort of 3 to 6 months, is identifying who those potential partners out within the system, the health system, care system, are going to be and building the relationships with them. We're also going to be giving out the first lot of the Innovation Fund awards end of June, probably, to get that underway. So then we'll start to see what actually it's like when people are delivering and how do we monitor that, measure that, how do we keep involved in that so we can see what's learning and what's not. Then with the Get Involved Skills platform, we are really looking to develop that more, to be more comprehensive. So we already have a resources page on there, lots of really useful resources about policies and procedures, about good practice, connections, references to guidelines, all sorts of things on there, which I would urge people to go and check out because it's already brilliant. But obviously, there's a lot of information out there and we need to find what is the useful information to bring in and put up there. It's probably on a website somewhere else, but it's useful to have everything together so people can just see, oh, that's up there too, I'll check that one out, and find that there's really useful guidance, something they haven't even thought about particularly.
Thank you so much for your time today, Nikki. I've got one last question for you, which is, in such a big project with so many different things happening, is there one particular thing that stands out to you as exciting or interesting?
I think what's unique about this project is that it is fluid, that it is about learning. It isn't a target-driven project, which so often it is. We've said we're going to do this, we've got to get 28 of those, we've got to get 100 of these, and we've got to do it by that date. And you're just driven to try and do it as best you can, but at the end you're being forced to do stuff because you said you would deliver this a quantity. This is much more about quality. This is much more about, don't let's number worry about the numbers. Let's try and drill down and see the nitty-gritty of, if there's a group of adults with learning disabilities who live in rural North Norfolk who would love to volunteer but don't know how to do it, what are the actual steps we need to take to enable them to feel confident about it, for them to understand what the options are, the opportunities, to look at their transport requirements, look at the training that organisation that might host them will need before they come so that they can welcome them properly and give them the right support, that we can measure the benefit to those individuals. Did they get out of it? They hoped they would. Did they feel supported? Would they like to do it again? Where might they like to do it? So that, there's lots of questions there that we can learn a great deal from. And normally we don't have the time to ask all those questions or to focus on a small group like that and to really learn from it. And then say, okay, we think we've sorted some of the challenges up in North Norfolk. Let's try it with a different group somewhere else, or let's try it over in West Norfolk, where there's a group that would like to do something a bit similar. And let's see what else we can learn from there. And then to the wider voluntary sector, if you would like adults with learning disabilities to come and help you in your organisation, they'd love to come and do it, but you need to have this and this in place. So I think that's going to be really exciting.
We hope you'll agree with Nikki that it sounds like an exciting initiative to be involved in. To hear how the Norfolk and Waveney partnership fits within the wider context, we now turn to our second guest.
So I'm Samantha Hartles. I am the National Lead for Volunteering for Health, working at NHS Charities Together. And I guess a summary of my role would be the kind of responsibility around strategic systems change for volunteering infrastructure, with a focus on how we do it through learning. So quite a nice, exciting job, I would say.
Is there a way that you can summarise such a big project and tell us what is Volunteering for Health?
I'll give it a try. So it's a national programme, and the specific focus is on volunteering infrastructure. So we're investing £10 million over 3 years, and the core focus, well, there's a few core areas, is developing volunteering infrastructure and building capacity and capability in organisations in health and care, accelerating change and breaking down barriers to volunteering, building connections and a network between systems, testing new models and hopefully scaling them up, spreading best practice and just developing that infrastructure in as many places as possible. But I think the most important thing is the focus on learning. So although we've got 15 funded partnerships, it's how we then scale up that learning to all the other systems across England so that they can develop their volunteering infrastructure.
Such an exciting opportunity and something that doesn't come along very often. Would you be able to tell us about the background to the programme, how it came to being?
I don't think we go a day without mentioning the COVID-19 pandemic. But during the pandemic, obviously, we had hundreds and thousands of volunteers that stepped forward to give their time and to support the NHS and their communities. And the pandemic really highlighted the important role that volunteers can play. But it also raised a lot of questions about the effectiveness of our current volunteering approaches and what could we do to harness some of that learning and the power of volunteers. So after COVID pandemic, the NHS Volunteering Task Force was set up in 2022, and that was bringing together volunteers, clinicians, civil servants, the voluntary sector, to understand how to harness and build upon that outpouring of help that we saw happen in the pandemic. The result was a set of recommendations to take volunteering to the next level, and that's kind of how this programme has been born, out of that set of recommendations. So it's being delivered in partnership between NHS England, CW+, who are the official charity for Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, and NHS Charities Together. And I guess it's just important to say that even though so much amazing work came out of the pandemic and it hasn't continued everywhere, and purely not at that scale, this programme isn't about increasing volunteer numbers or demonstrating the value of volunteering, because I think we're all very aware of how wonderful volunteering is. That kind of value is understood and known by many. It's actually asking more questions about how do we make this work in every system, in every place, and what are the conditions that are needed to make that work.
So with all that in mind, you mentioned that Norfolk and Waveney were one of 15 partnerships. What was it about the application for our area that stood out?
So we really wanted a diverse portfolio of partnerships. So we wanted some areas that had little to no volunteering infrastructure whatsoever, who maybe have not had much investment over previous years, through to other systems that are more mature, that have great models already, but the investment would kind of take them to the next level. We wanted a mixture of NHS-led, we wanted voluntary sector-led, and also to think about the different issues that partnerships were looking at specifically. So something for me that stood out for Norfolk and Waveney was the wanting to target local issues and that real passion for co-design and cross-sectoral collaboration, but also the fact that Norfolk and Waveney has got brilliant foundations in place with a proven track record with your volunteer Norfolk volunteer passport and the Volunteer Academy. So it's, I think we see this partnership and the potential is really exciting because there's already so much great work in place with really good, strong relationships. It's being able to see how that goes to the next level.
Does the work we'll be looking at in Norfolk and Waveney have any similarities to the partnerships in other areas?
Yes. So we are starting to see some themes coming out. There are some differences too. One thing I'd say is that the Norfolk and Waveney partnership having an ICB or Integrated Care Board lead is quite different. We only have two other partnerships, and that's Humber and North Yorkshire and Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly, that have a similar kind of governance and setup. So I'm really interested in that, particularly to see, does that impact governance and sustainability and decision making when we have these partnerships embedded in the voluntary sector versus in NHS structures? I think also the fact that there's the neighbourhood fund that Norfolk and Waveney are looking at is something, again, there's only four partnerships in total that are looking at having a neighbourhood fund. And that's something, again, I think that excites a lot of people and really appealed to the panel, because for us, it's brilliant that you've got the existing infrastructure in place and the strong relationships, but it's also acknowledging that kind of need for grassroots engagement, broadening diversity of volunteers and that kind of true co-design. So yeah, that's something that kind of, it stands out as a theme for four of you, but is still quite different. And I think we'll all be kind of watching for that because it's very exciting. But I guess the main themes that are coming out at the moment is people wanting to look at volunteering passports, recruitment and retention, digital platforms and influencing systems and decision makers, which given the current climate with all that's happening in the health system, I think is quite expected. But yes, so there's quite a lot of different themes going on. Something that's particularly exciting about the Norfolk and Waveney partnership is the primary care element. So out of those three kind of core focus areas, looking at primary care volunteering infrastructure. And I think it aligns really nicely with those three NHS shifts that we're hearing about transforming care. So the focus from hospital to community, and also thinking about moving to more of a preventative model, thinking about that neighbourhood health and neighbourhood model. We actually only have one of the partnership that's thinking about doing some work with primary care, and that's the Somerset partnership, who are working with primary care networks. But I've got a lot of passion for that side of things and thinking about, it's an area that maybe we've not really thought about before, and volunteering infrastructure and the role of the voluntary sector with primary care could be really powerful, particularly when we think about health inequalities and core 20 plus 5 and growing volunteer diversity. So yes, lots of things to shout about, I think, with this partnership.
That's all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the programme?
I think it would be helpful to say and acknowledge that there's a lot going on in the volunteering space at the moment, and that's locally, regionally and nationally. There are lots of big players in the arena that are making calls to action and statements about what we need to be doing with volunteering, particularly in the healthcare space. And I think we're a fairly quiet voice at the moment. And I think that infrastructure isn't always the juiciest topic, but I think it's really important to acknowledge that if we can get infrastructure right, particularly within this programme, and can kind of spread and scale that across England, I think that's the enabler for us to be able to achieve so much more improved outcomes, improved experiences for patients and communities. So yeah, that it feels like it's one layer of many different kind of transformation projects that are happening at the moment in the volunteering space, but it's just such a great opportunity to have everybody involved in it.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Our thanks go to Nikki and Samantha for taking the time to speak to us about volunteering for health. As the work continues, we'll share stories of the learning and progress that the team are making. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review this podcast. It all helps people find us and spread the word about volunteering. This podcast was produced for the Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care System by Hospital Radio Norwich. Hosted by Sarah Briggs. Producer was Jules Alderson. Original music composed and performed by Philip Aldred. Interviews by Sarah Briggs and Jules Alderson.